This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello, I'm Mercedes Stevenson, and you're listening to The West Block. The death of Russia's most vocal critic is raising serious concerns around the globe. Alexei Navalny was imprisoned multiple times, poisoned with a nerve agent, and finally sent to a jail north of the Arctic Circle, where he died Friday. Now Western leaders are squarely pointing the blame on Russian leader Vladimir Putin. From the French prime minister who wrote, "In today's Russia, free spirits are being sent to the gulag and condemned to death," to the British foreign minister who added, "Putin should be accountable for what has happened." And there was condemnation as well from the United States.
Make no mistake, Putin is responsible for Navalny's death. Putin is responsible. What has happened to Navalny is yet more proof of Putin's brutality.
Navalny's death has renewed outrage over Putin's ruthlessness in achieving his goals, as Canadian leaders and world leaders are being briefed about a new and pressing security issue involving Russia that could pose an international threat. John Bolton, former U.S. National Security Advisor for Donald Trump, joins us now. Mr. Bolton, nice to see you. Thank you for making time for us today.
Glad to be with you.
I'd like to begin with asking your reaction to the death of Alexei Navalny and what message this sends to the world about how Putin is behaving.
Well, I think it clearly indicates Putin thinks he can do this or have his agents do it, obviously, and really not suffer any penalties, not be in any danger in terms of domestic Russian consequences. And not fearing what Europe and Canada and the United States and others around the world might do in response. So it indicates, I think, real confidence on Putin's part that he can get rid of this thorn in his side and not see Russia suffer any real negative effects.
So we have the death of Alexei Navalny. We have the war in Ukraine. We have all of the other things that Mr. Putin is engaged in, including concerns about nuclear capabilities in space. When you look at this picture right now, how significant do you think the threat from Russia is to Western democracies?
Well, I think the threat is significant. I think Putin's near-term objectives are what he said back in 2005, basically to try and recreate not the Soviet Union, but the Tsarist Russian Empire. Ukraine is one of the biggest pieces of that. But what happens in Ukraine or Belarus or Moldova and elsewhere in Russia has an effect on everybody in the NATO alliance. And I think it was a mistake for NATO not to have made Ukraine a member back in 2008 when George W. Bush suggested it. I'm not sure we'd be seeing this invasion at all if Ukraine were a part of NATO. So it's a lesson for us that will apply not just to our security in the North Atlantic, but really globally, because China and others are obviously watching what our collective response is.
Donald Trump made some comments last week, which is certainly very concerning to all NATO members, but in particular Canada and countries that don't spend 2%, saying that if Russia were to attack one of us, he would in fact encourage it. That's concerning about whether or not he would stay in the NATO alliance. And there's been some Canadian politicians who suggest that they don't think he's serious, if he becomes president again, about blowing up NATO. You were his advisor and you know what he thinks on this. What's your perspective? Is it rhetoric or is he serious?
He's deadly serious. If there are any Canadian politicians that would like to know what it's like to work with Donald Trump firsthand, I'd be glad to talk to them on a quiet basis. I wrote in my book, The Room Where It Happened, about what almost transpired at the NATO summit in Brussels in 2018. We were right on the edge of withdrawing from NATO then. And fortunately, it didn't happen. But Donald Trump has a simple view of life, and everything's dollars and cents. He looks at the balance sheet, and Canada and others are not spending 2%. So for Americans who think that, you know, Europeans are a bunch of freeloaders to begin with, it has powerful appeal. And Donald Trump's urging this criticism, not because he's trying to strengthen NATO, as those of us who have pleaded with our allies to spend more on defense for many, many years do it to strengthen NATO. Trump is doing this to lay the foundation to withdraw. And if anybody really thinks he's not serious, they need to think again.
If Donald Trump becomes the president and Canada does not spend 2%, and while there was indications the government says they're spending more, they're nowhere near that 2% target, what do you think the consequences will be for our country?
Well, as with many things Trump says, or some of his advisors are saying, that we'll have a two-tiered NATO, where the U.S. will work with countries that spend more than 2%, but will let the rest fend for themselves. You know, this is at one level, it's evidence of how Trump misapprehends the alliance. We're not in NATO out of charity. We're not defending Canada because we want to be nice to Canada. We're defending the alliance as a whole because it's in America's interest to defend the alliance as a whole. And therefore, this idea that you can have a two-tiered NATO simply doesn't work. And I'll just take Canada as an example. Because you're right next door, we can't defend the United States effectively against incoming Russian or Chinese intercontinental ballistic missiles or heavy bombers without being able to work together with Canada. This goes back to the early days of the Cold War, the dew line, the distant early warning line in Canada, Alaska, to alert us to missiles coming from the Soviet Union. You can't have an alliance with donut holes in it that allow Russia, China, or somebody else to exploit them. So what will happen is that if Trump tries to withdraw or decides he's only going to support countries that are spending 2%, is the alliance effectively will collapse. Honestly, the one thing I could say in the short term is spend more on defense. We're all going to need to. My own view is the range of threats that the U.S. faces around the world mean our spending will have to go from something in the range of 3.5% of GDP back to the levels we spent in the Reagan years between 5% and 6%. And that means everybody else in NATO is going to have to come up too. So we can either get serious about the threats we face around the world, not just from China and Russia, but from North Korea, from Iran, from a continued threat of international terrorism, or we could suffer the consequences.
What is Donald Trump's relationship like with some of these regimes? And I'm thinking in particular his relationship with Putin and his relationship with the Iranian regime.
Trump sees international affairs as being equivalent to the personal relationship that heads of state have with each other. So in Trump's case, if he has a good personal relationship with Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping, then he thinks the United States has a good relationship with Russia or China. That's extremely simplistic. And indeed, when you face really hard men like Putin and Xi, they're not going to let personal relationships sway them from their effort to advance their own national interest. But that's not how Trump sees it. And that's one of the reasons I think the likes of Putin and Xi are looking forward to Trump coming back, because they think, to put it bluntly, he's an easy mark.
Iran is of increasing concern and obviously increasing discussion with what's been happening in the Middle East and all of these Iranian-backed militias who have been engaging American troops, bombing them on bases with drones, with what's happening in Gaza. And I know that you personally have been targeted by Iran. And we've been talking more and more in Canada about the Iranian regime interfering here, targeting dissidents from Iran, trying to hire the Hell's Angels to carry out assassination attempts. Do you think that Western countries are fully cognizant of the threat that Iran poses?
Iran's threat for most of the rest of the world is comprised both of terrorism, and, you know, Ronald Reagan designated Iran a state sponsor of terrorism, the first one ever so designated back in his administration, and also Iran's continued pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missile delivery systems. So the Iranian effort to assassinate, in this case, former American officials that they're unhappy with, or Iranian dissidents around the world, in Europe, in North America, is a very real threat. And it tells you exactly what the character of the regime is, and why attempts to negotiate something with them, while they may seem idealistic, are totally wrongheaded, because the Iranians have absolutely no intention of honoring those commitments.
Mr. Bolton, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Russian President Vladimir Putin is facing widespread international condemnation for Alexei Navalny's death, including from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Alexei Navalny has been had been an extraordinary fighter for human rights, for democracy, and someone who was standing up for the Russian people, standing up with extraordinary courage for a better future for Russia and for Russians. We know how much that scares and continues to scare Vladimir Putin.
Navalny's wife was attending the Munich Security Conference when the news broke. It's a who's who of global leaders and national security officials. And that's where we reached Defense Minister Bill Blair. Minister Blair, thank you so much for joining us. Can we begin with the news of Navalny's death and what sort of reaction you're hearing in Munich to this, concerns about what it might mean in terms of Russia's intentions?
Well, and I can tell you, Mercedes, Navalny's wife is here at the conference and actually spoke at the conference after word of his death was made public. It was very emotional, I think, for very many of the participants. And I think it really places a great deal of punctuation and concern on one of the main themes of this conference is Russia's illegal intervention in invasion of Ukraine. It is clearly evidence of the impressive regime that exists there. And it was a very important topic of discussion here among the security leaders of the world who have convened.
Is Canada doing enough to hold Russia accountable?
Well, you know, we've had a number of discussions. I was actually having a conversation earlier today with Senator Peter Beam, who's here as well. His Senate committee has recently done a study on the effectiveness of sanctions, and we talked about those things. Canada has implemented significant sanctions against the Russian regime. We are obviously, stalwartly in support of Ukraine's defense of the illegal invasion of their country. But I think as well, part of the discussion that's taking place here among world leaders is what more can be done. And I think that Canada has already taken some very important steps, but we're going to continue to explore ways in which we can hold this very oppressive regime to account.
One of the steps that could be taken is more defense spending. And of course, that was on the radar a great deal last week with Donald Trump's comments about basically blowing up NATO. And not only that, but encouraging Russia to attack countries like Canada, who do not meet the 2% of GDP. He could be the next president of the United States. In light of the global security situation, Russian aggression, and Trump's comments, is your government reconsidering the amount you're spending on defense? And I'm not referring to the commitments you've already made. Are you looking at committing more to get to that 2%?
And this very simple answer is, yes, we are looking to do more. Canada must do more and needs to do more. We will be doing more with respect to defense spending. But with respect to, and it's not in response to the rhetorical comments that were made in the U.S. presidential election. I'm actually pretty confident. I've been part of engaging with NATO leaders. I spent 2 days in Brussels this week. There is a remarkable commitment among all NATO members, including Canada, to have a very positive projection in defense spending, to invest in the things that are going to make our alliance stronger, to continue to assist Ukraine. I think when Mr. Putin invaded Russia 2 years ago, his intention was actually to challenge the NATO alliance. It's had exactly the opposite effect. And I'm actually confident that former President Trump had an opportunity to see the unity of purpose, the strength and resolve of the NATO alliance to significantly increase their defense spending, but to do it in a coordinated, collaborative way and working together. I think he would have a greater appreciation of the value of NATO. And I'm confident in NATO's commitment, and I'm also confident in the United States' continued support of that commitment.
Does that mean you would meet 2%, though? I think that's sort of the yes-no question people are interested in.
Well, and what I can tell you is, first of all, we have significantly increased our defense spending. Through 2026, we had already planned to increase our spending from 2017 by 70%. But we're coming from a long way back. Mercedes, in 2014, under the previous government, our defense spending actually fell below 1%. So we've been making some very significant investments in a national shipbuilding strategy. We've been acquiring fighter jets and multi-mission aircraft for our Air Force. And recently, we've been making, I think, some very significant announcements in some of the equipment needs that our armed forces require. But we recognize that we need to do more. I will tell you, a priority for me as Canada's Minister of National Defense is security of our continent and investments that are going to maintain the security and sovereignty of Canada's high Arctic. We're working very closely with our American partners on the NORAD modernization. We're putting $40 billion additional into that. There are additional investments that we have to make. I believe I've been able to present a credible path forward to our NATO allies, but there are additional investments that are going to have to be made. And I'm very confident that the government will be bringing more information on that, certainly in leading up to the NATO Leaders Alliance meeting that's going to take place in Washington in June.
Speaking of NORAD, last time this year we were talking about Chinese balloons in the sky, and there was sort of this panic about whether or not we could protect our own aerospace. That continues to be a concern. I wonder if you're worried about, under a Trump presidency, NORAD being threatened as well. If he's willing to say that he would pull out of NATO, and some of his former very close advisors say it's not just an idle threat, he's thought about this, does that potentially jeopardize NORAD and by extension, Canada's sovereignty?
Well, I will tell you, I'm not worried, but I'm highly motivated. I was in Colorado just last week. I went to Colorado Springs to the NORAD headquarters. We had a change of command ceremony. I met with the Deputy Secretary of Defense. We have talked about the very significant investments that both Canada and the United States have to make in modernizing NORAD, in particularly in such things as over-the-horizon radar and over-the-polar radar systems that are going to enable us to do a much better job of not just dealing with the Chinese balloons that we saw last year, but in order to secure missile defense and aeronautic defense in North America. We're highly motivated, and we've already committed significant money, about $39 billion, over the next several years in order to make those investments. The work's important. It's essential. Canada has a responsibility to ensure that we are able to defend our own sovereign territory. We know that that's going to require significant new investment, that we're absolutely committed to do it. As I say, I'm not worried. I am resolved. And we're going to do that work and get the job done.
I want to turn to the situation in the Middle East. You were very categoric at the beginning of this war between Israel and Hamas that Hamas has to be eliminated. With the discussions about Israel going into Rafah, and now that we're several months into this, I'm wondering, do you still feel that way, that the end goal of this must be that Hamas is eliminated or no longer has military capability?
And to be clear, what I was talking about was eliminating the terrorist threat that had brought that terrorist act to the people of Israel and killed so many innocent lives. I still believe that collectively Israel has a right to defend itself and that we have to eliminate that terrorist threat. But eliminating that terrorist threat can't be done at the expense of the Palestinian people. There's a lot of innocent people who have suffered, and we're very concerned, and our government has expressed that concern. To continue military action in the Rafah area, we have called for the humanitarian ceasefire, the provision of immediate aid, and we continue to call for the release of those hostages. You know, we are very much hopeful for peace, and at the same time, we remain concerned about the ability of terrorist organizations to continue to engage in extremist violence.
Do you support the calls for a ceasefire? And I don't mean a temporary humanitarian one, but a ceasefire that some in your government have been saying is necessary. The Israelis say they won't be able to pursue Hamas and end their military capability if that's the case. And yet you also have extensive civilian casualties.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful that Israel can continue to pursue Hamas, but do it in a way which does not put literally millions of innocent Palestinian people in jeopardy. I believe that our government's been very clear that we support an immediate humanitarian ceasefire accompanied by the release of those hostages and aid going into those people. We continue to support Israel's efforts to eliminate that threat, but it can't be at the expense of the Palestinian people.
Do you agree with your colleague Rob Oliphant's comments that were recorded on a Zoom call and released? He was very critical of the government's position. He did not think that funding should have been taken away from UNRWA, and that he thought that more needed to be done. Are you on the same page as him?
First of all, I think I know Rob Oliphant really well. He's a thoroughly decent and principled man. I think many of my colleagues have been conflicted. And on the one hand, I think we generally accept it and strongly support Israel's right to defend itself against a terrorist organization. And at the same time, we're human beings. And there is compassion for those innocent civilians who've been impacted by the war that has been taking place in Gaza. And I know Rob very well, and I'm sure he's been deeply moved by the plight of those innocent civilians. And one of the things I think is the strength of our government is that diversity of opinion is actually, I think, our strength. I think that the position that the government has taken is the right one, but I understand and I have some sympathy for concerns that are being expressed by a number of my colleagues.
Minister Blair, thank you so much for joining us from Munich today.
Of course, Mercedes.
Now for one last thing. Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault has been a lightning rod for the Liberal government. He's charged in part with getting Canada to net zero emissions by 2050. Now, navigating that road was never going to be easy or lacking in controversy. But the minister made things a lot worse for himself this week when he executed a major self-inflicted wound. The stunning statement that the government would stop investing in roads in a country as big and rural and northern as Canada was met by outrage from many, including some provinces. The minister clarified to say he did not mean all roads, but rather one specific project.
I was talking specifically about projects like the Troisième Lien that the CAQ government in Quebec wants to move forward with.
The change in tone came the same week that the feds rebranded their carbon rebate check. This after the carbon tax has become a regular and effective Tory attack line.
Why won't he follow the facts and axe the tax?
Yeah. The changes and controversy come months after the government issued a temporary carbon tax carve-out for home heating oil. And while the Liberals may have had every intention of investing in roads, the repeated fumbles seem to come down to a tone deafness in message. That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back here next Sunday. I'm Mercedes Stevenson for The West Block.